Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 11, side 2. Just enough time for the Etherway to dock, unload the specially tweaked tractor beam burst capacitors they were courteously donating to the Empire's war effort, and get into backup position for Mazik's attempt to grab the CGT from the main command center 8 docking platforms away. "There goes Eller," Gillespie commented, nodding off to starboard. Avis looked. It was the Chimere, all right, with the Clibbering running in flanking position beside it. Beyond it, he could see the starry ice drifting in toward a docking platform near the perimeter. Near as he could tell, everything seemed to be falling into place. Though with someone like Thrawn in charge, appearances didn't mean much. For all he knew, the Grand Admiral might already know all about this raid, and was just waiting for everybody to sneak in under the net before wrapping it around them. "You ever hear anything else from Carda?" Gillespie asked, a little too casually. "He's not deserting us, Gillespie," Avis growled. "If he says he has something more important to do, then he has something more important to do, period." "I know," Gillespie said, his voice noncommittal. "Just thought some of the others might have asked." Avis grimaced. Here they went again. He'd have thought that opening up Ferrier's treachery at Hijarne would have settled this whole thing once and for all. He should have known better. "I'm here," he reminded Gillespie. "So are the Starry Ice, the Dawn Beat, the Last Resort, the Amanda Fallow, the..." "Yeah, right, I get the point," Gillespie interrupted. "Don't get huffy at me. My ships are here, too." "Sorry," Avis said. "I'm just getting tired of everybody always being so suspicious of everybody else." Gillespie shrugged. "We're smugglers. We've had a lot of practice at it. Personally, I'm surprised the group's held together this long. What do you think he's doing?" "Ooh, Carda?" Ave shook his head. "No idea. But it'll be something important." "Sure," Gillespie pointed ahead. "That the marker boy?" "Looks like it," Avis agreed. "Get ready to copy the course data. Ready or not, here we go." The orders came up on Wedge's comm screen, and he gave them a quick check as he keyed for the squadron's private frequency. "Rogue Squadron, this is Rogue Leader," he said. "Orders. We're going in with the first wave, flanking Admiral Akbar's command cruiser. Hold position here until we're cleared for positioning. All ships acknowledge." The acknowledgements came in, crisp and firm, and Wedge smiled tightly to himself. There'd been some worry among Akbar's staff, he knew, that the long flight here to the rendezvous point might take the edge off those units that had first had to carry out decoy duty near the supposed Tangreen jump-off point. Wedge didn't know about the others, but it was clear that Rogue Squadron was primed and ready for battle. "You suppose Thrawn got our message, Rogue Leader?" Jensen's voice came into Wedge's thoughts. "Their message?" "Oh, right, that little conversation outside the Mumbri Storve Cantina with Talon Carda's friend Avis. The one Hobby had been firmly convinced would be going straight to Imperial Intelligence." "I don't know, Rogue Five," Wedge told him. "Actually, I sort of hope it didn't." "Kind of a waste of time if it didn't." "Not necessarily," Wedge pointed out. "Remember, he said they had some other scheme online that they wanted to coordinate with ours. Anything that hits or distracts the Empire can't help but do us some good." "They've probably just got some smuggling drop planned," Rogue Six sniffed, "hoping to run it through while the Imperials are looking the other way." Wedge didn't reply. Luke Skywalker seemed to think Carda was quietly on the New Republic side, and that was good enough for him. But there wasn't any way he was going to convince the rest of his squadron of that. Someday, maybe, Carda would be willing to take a more open stand against the Empire. Until then, at least in Wedge's opinion, everyone who wasn't on the Grand Admiral's side was helping the New Republic, whether they admitted it or not. Sometimes even whether they knew it or not. His comm display changed. The Vanguard cone of Star Cruisers had made it into their launch formation. Time for their escort ships to do the same. Okay, Rogue Squadron, he told the others. We've got the light. Let's get to our places. Easing power to his X-Wing's drive, he headed off toward the running lights ahead. 2.5 hours, if the rest of the fleet assembly stayed on schedule, and they'd be dropping out of light speed within spitting distance of the Bilbringi shipyards. A shame, he thought, that they wouldn't be able to see the looks on the Imperials' faces. The latest group of reports from the Tangreen region scrolled across the display. Pelion skimmed through them, scowling blackly to himself. No mistake, the rebels were still there, still slipping forces into the region, still doing nothing to draw attention to themselves. And in 2 hours, if intelligence's projections were even halfway accurate, they would be launching an attack on an effectively undefended system. They're doing quite well, aren't they, Captain? Thrawn commented from beside him. A very convincing performance all around. Sir, Pelion said, fighting to keep his voice properly deferential, I respectfully suggest that the rebel activity is not any kind of performance. The preponderance of evidence points to Tangreen as their probable target. Several key starfighter units and capital ships have clearly been assembled at likely jump-off points. Wrong, Captain, Thrawn cut him off coolly. That's what they want us to believe, but it's nothing more than a carefully constructed illusion. The ships you refer to pulled out of those sectors between 40 and 70 hours ago, leaving behind a few men with the proper uniforms and insignia to confuse our spies. The bulk of the force is even now on its way to Bilbringi. Yes, sir, Pelion said, with a silent sigh of defeat. So that was it. Once again, Thrawn had chosen to ignore his arguments, as well as all the evidence, in favor of nebulous hunches and intuitions. And if he was wrong, it wouldn't be simply the Tangreen ubiquitrate base that would be lost. An error of that magnitude would shake the confidence and momentum of the entire Imperial war machine. All war is risk, Captain, Thrawn said quietly. But this is not as large a risk as you seem to think. If I'm wrong, we lose one ubiquitrate base. Important, certainly, but hardly critical. He cocked a blue-black eyebrow. But if I'm right, we stand a good chance of destroying 2 entire rebel sector fleets. Consider the impact that will have on the current balance of power. Yes, sir, Pelion said dutifully. He could feel Thrawn's eyes on him. You don't have to believe, the Grand Admiral told him, but be prepared to be proved wrong. I very much hope so, sir, Pelion said. Good. Is my flagship ready, Captain? Pelion felt his back stiffen a bit in old parade ground reflex. The Chimera is fully at your command, Admiral. Then prepare the fleet for hyperspace. The glowing eyes glittered. And for battle. There were no real paths up Mount Tantus, but as Luke had predicted, the Nogri had a knack for terrain. They made remarkably good time, even with the droids slowing them down. And as the sun was disappearing below the trees, they reached the air intakes. It was not, however, exactly the way Luke had envisioned it. Looks more like a retractable turbolaser turret than an air system, he commented to Han as they moved cautiously through the trees toward the heavy metal mesh and the even heavier metal structure the mesh was set into. Reminds me of the bunker we had to break into on Endor, Anne muttered back. Except with a screen door. Easy. They might have intruder detectors. Anywhere else, Luke would have reached out into the tunnel with the Force. Here, within the Ys Alamiri effect surrounding him, it was like being blind. Like being on Mirkar again. He looked at Mara, wondering if she was having similar thoughts and memories. Perhaps so. Even in the fading light, he could see the tension in her face, an anxiety and fear that hadn't been there before they entered the Ys Alamiri bubble. So, what now? She growled, flashing a brief glare at him before looking away again. We just sit around until morning. Han had his macro binoculars trained on the intake. Looks like a computer outlet there on the wall under the overhang, he said. The rest of you stay put. I'll take R2 over and try plugging him in. Beside Han, Chewbacca rumbled a warning. Where? Han muttered, drawing his blaster. The Wookiee pointed with one hand as he unlimbered his bowcaster with the other. The whole group froze, weapons ready. And it was then that Luke first heard the faint sounds of distant blaster fire. From several kilometers away, he thought. Possibly somewhere down the mountain. But without his Jedi enhancement techniques, there was no way to know for sure. From much closer came a bird-like warbling. A group of Mynirshi approach, Ekrikor said, listening intently to the signaling. The Nogri have stopped them. They wish to come forward and speak. Tell them to stay there, Han said, hesitating just a second before holstering his blaster. Pulling the bleached Satna Chaka clawbird out of a pocket of his jacket, he beckoned to 3PO. Come on, Goldenrod. Let's go find out what they want. Ekrikor muttered an order, and one of the Nogri moved silently to Han's side. Chewbacca stepped to the other side, and with a helplessly protesting 3PO trailing along, they all headed off into the trees. R2 gurgled uncomfortably, his dome head swiveling back and forth between Luke and the departing 3PO. He'll be all right, Luke assured him. Han won't let anything happen to him. The squat droid grunted, probably expressing his opinion of the depths of Han's concern for 3PO. We may have more problems than 3PO's health to worry about in a minute, Lando said grimly. I thought I heard blaster fire from down the mountain. I did too, Mara nodded. Probably coming from the storehouse entrance. Lando looked over his shoulder at the massive air intake. Let's see if we can get that vent open. At least it'll give us another direction to go if we need to jump. Luke looked at Mara, but she was avoiding his eyes again. All right, he told Lando. I'll go first. You bring R2. Cautiously, he moved through the trees toward the intakes. But if there were any anti-intruder defenses, they didn't seem to be working anymore. He made it in under the metal overhang without incident. And with the wind of the inrushing air ruffling through his hair, he studied the mesh. At this distance, he could see that it was more like a heavy grating, with each strand of what had looked like mesh actually a plate extending several centimeters back into the tunnel. A formidable barrier, but nothing his lightsaber couldn't handle. There was the sound of a footstep through leaves, and he turned as Lando and R2 came up. The outlet's over there, R2, he told the droid, pointing to the socket in the side wall. Plug in and see what you can find out. The droid warbled acknowledgement, and with Lando's help, maneuvered his way across the rough ground. It's not just going to open up for you, Mara said from behind him. R2's going to check it out, Luke told her, peering at her face. You all right? He'd expected a sarcastic comment, or at least a withering glare. He wasn't prepared for her to reach out and grip his hand. I want you to promise me something, she said in a low voice. Whatever it costs, don't let me go over to Cabauth's side. You understand? Don't let me join him, even if you have to kill me. Luke stared at her, an eerie chill running through him. Cabauth can't force you to his side, Mara, he said. Not without your cooperation. Are you sure of that? Really sure? Luke grimaced. There was so much he didn't know yet about the Force. No. Neither am I, Mara said. That's what worries me. Cabauth told me back on Jomark that I'd be joining him. He said it again here, too, the night he arrived. He may have been mistaken, Luke suggested hesitantly. Or lying. I don't want to risk it. She gripped Luke's hand tighter. I'm not going to serve him, Skywalker. I want you to promise that you'll kill me before you'll let him do that to me. Luke swallowed hard. Even without the Force, he could hear in her voice that she meant it. But for a Jedi to promise to cut someone down in cold blood. I'll promise you this, he said instead. Whatever happens in there, you won't have to face him alone. I'll be there to help you. She turned her face away. What if you're already dead? So it was down to this. The same battle she'd been fighting with herself since the day they met. You don't have to do it, he said quietly. The Emperor's dead. That voice you hear is just a memory he left behind inside you. I know that, she snapped, a touch of fire flickering through the cold red. You think that makes it any easier to ignore? No, he conceded. But you can't use the voice as an excuse either. Your destiny is in your hands, Mara. Not Cabauth's or the Emperor's. In the end, you're the one who makes the decisions. You have that right and that responsibility. From the forest came the sound of footsteps. Fine, Mara growled, dropping Luke's hand and taking a step back away from him. You spout philosophy if you want to. Just remember what I said. Spinning around, she turned to face the approaching group. So, what's going on, Solo? We've picked up some allies, he said, throwing what looked like a frown in Luke's general direction. Sort of allies, anyway. Hey, 3PO, Lando called, waving to him. Come over here, will you, and tell me what R2's all excited about. Certainly, sir, 3PO said, shuffling over to the computer terminal. Luke looked back at Han. What do you mean, sort of allies? It's kind of confusing, Han said. At least the way 3PO translates it. They don't want to help us. They just want to go in and fight the Imperials. They followed us because they figured we'd find a back door they could get in through. Luke studied the group of silent, four-armed aliens towering over the Nogri guarding them. All wore four or more long knives and carried crossbows. Not exactly the sort of weapons to use against armored Imperial troops. I don't know. What do you think? Hey, Han, Lando called softly before Han could answer. Come here. You'll want to hear this. What? Han asked as they went over to the computer terminal. Tell them, 3PO, Lando said.
Apparently, there is an attack taking place at the main entrance to the mountain, 3PO said in that perennially surprised manner of his. R2 has picked up several reports detailing perimeter guard troop movements into the area.
Who's attacking? Han cut him off.
Apparently, some of the Sedans from the city, 3PO said. According to the gate reports, they demanded the release of their Lord Cabauth before they attacked.
Han looked at Luke. The data pad, Makes sense, Luke agreed. A message from Cabal, inciting them to attack. I wonder how he managed to smuggle it out to them. Confirms he's been locked up anyway, Mara put in. I hope they've got some good guards on his cell. Pardon me, Master Luke, 3PO said, cocking his head to one side. But as to the datapad Captain Solo mentioned, I would suggest it arrive the same way the weapons did, according to reports. What kind of weapons? Han said. I was getting to that, sir, 3PO said, sounding a bit huffy. According to gate reports, the attackers are armed with blasters, portable missile launchers, and thermal detonators. All quite modern versions, if reports are to be believed. Never mind where they got them from, Lando said. The point is that we've got a custom-cut diversion here. Let's use it while it's still there. Chewbacca rumbled suspiciously. You're right, pal, Han agreed, peering into the grating. It's awfully convenient timing. But Lando's right. We might as well go for it. Lando nodded. Okay, R2. Shut it all down. The squat droid chirped acknowledgement, his computer arm rotating in the socket. The inflow of air across Luke's face began to decrease, and a minute later had stopped completely. R2 warbled again. R2 reports that all operating systems for this intake have been shut down, 3PO announced. He warns, however, that once the duty cycle has ended, the dust barriers and driving fields may be reactivated from a central location. Better get moving, then, Luke said, igniting his lightsaber and stepping over to the intake. 4 careful slices later, they had their entrance. Looks clear, Han said, climbing gingerly through the opening and stepping over to the limited protection of the side wall. Got maintenance lights showing up down the tunnel a ways. R2, you get us any floor plans for this place? The droid jabbered as he rolled through the opening. I'm terribly sorry, sir, 3PO said. He has full schematics for the air duct system itself, but he says that further information on the facility was not available at this terminal. There'll be other terminals down the line, Lando said. Are we leaving a rear guard? One of the Nogri will stay, Ekrikor mewed at Han's elbow. He will keep the exit clear. Fine, Han said. Let's go. They were 50 meters down the tunnel and approaching the first of the dim maintenance lights Han had spotted, before Luke suddenly noticed that the silent Minurshi had followed them in. Han, he murmured, gesturing behind them. Yeah, I know, Han said. What did you want me to do? Tell them to go home? Luke looked back again. He was right, of course. But knives and crossbows against blasters? Ekrikor. What is your command, son of Vader? I want you to assign 2 of your people to go with those Minurshi, he told the Nogri. They're to guide them and help them with their attacks. But it is you we must protect, son of Vader, Ekrikor objected. You will be protecting me, Luke said. Every Imperial the Minurshi can pin down will be one less for us to worry about. But they can't pin any troops down if they're killed in the first sortie. The Nogri made an unhappy-sounding noise in the back of his throat. I hear and obey, he said reluctantly. He gestured to 2 of the Nogri, and as Luke watched them drop back down the tunnel, he caught a quick look at Mara's face as she passed one of the lights. The dread was still there, but along with it was a grim determination. Whatever was waiting ahead for them, she was ready to face it. He could only hope that he was, too. There it is, Carda announced, pointing ahead to the mountain rising out of the forest and the gathering shadows of twilight.
You sure?
Leia asked, stretching out with the force as hard as she could. Back at Bespin, during that mad escape from Lando's Cloud City, she'd been able to sense Luke's call from almost this far away. Here, now, there was nothing at all. That's where their nav feed seems to be leading us, Garda told her. Unless they've seen through Ghent's little deception and are sending us to some sort of decoy spot. He glanced over his shoulder at her. Anything?
No.
Leia looked out at the mountain, her stomach tightening painfully. After all their hopes and effort, they were too late. They must already be inside.
They're heading into trouble, then,
Ghent spoke up from the comm station, where he was still fiddling with the fine-tuning on his counterfeit Imperial ID code.
Flight control says they've got a riot going on at the entrance. They're diverting us to a secondary maintenance area about 10 kilometers north.
Leia shook her head.
We're going to have to risk contacting them.
Too dangerous, Duncan, the co-pilot, said. If they catch us using a non-Imperial comlink channel, we're likely to get shot down.
Perhaps there is another way,
Moff Vekar said, moving to Leia's side.
Ekrikor Clan Bakhtor will have left a guard at their entrance point. There is a Nogri recognition signal that can be created with landing lights.
Go ahead, Garda said. We can always claim a malfunction if the garrison notices. Chin, Corvus, watch your scopes. Stepping over to Duncan's board, the Nogri keyed the landing lights on and off a half dozen times. Leia stared out the viewport, trying to watch the whole mountain at once. If Han and the others had gone in above the dusk line... Got it, Corvus's voice came from his turbolaser turret. Bearing 003 Mark 17. Leia looked over Carter's shoulder as the coordinates came up on his nav display. There it was, faint but visible, a flickering light.
They are there, Moff Vekar confirmed.
Good, Carter said. Ghent, acknowledge that we're proceeding to that secondary maintenance area as ordered. Better find a seat and strap down, Counselor. We're about to have an unexpected repulsor lift malfunction. Between the trees and eroded rock outcroppings, it looked to Leia like an impossible place for a ship the size of the Wild Carda to land. But Carda and his crew had clearly pulled this trick before, and with a last-second sputter of precision-aimed turbolaser fire, they created just enough of a gap to put down into. Now what? Duncan asked, as Carda cycled back the repulsor lifts. Carda looked at Leia, raised an eyebrow in question.
I'm going in, Leia told him, the vision of Luke and Mara in danger hovering before her eyes. You don't have to come along.
The Counselor and I will go look for her friends, Carda answered Duncan, unstrapping and getting to his feet. Ghent, you'll try to convince the garrison that we don't need any assistance.
What about me? Duncan asked.
Carda smiled tightly. You'll stay ready in case they don't believe him. Come on, Counselor. The Nogri who'd returned their signal was nowhere in sight as they stepped out onto the Wild Carda's ramp. Where is he? Carda asked, looking around.
Waiting,
Moff Vekar said, putting a hand to the side of his mouth and giving a complex whistle. An answering whistle came, shifted into a complex warble.
Our identity is confirmed, he said. He bids us come quickly. The others are no more than a quarter hour ahead.
A quarter hour. Leia stared out at the starlit darkness of the mountain. Too late to warn them, but maybe not too late to help.
Come on, we're wasting time, she said.
Just a minute, Carda said, looking past her shoulder. We have to wait for... Ah! Leia turned. Coming down the corridor toward them from the aft section of the ship was a middle-aged man with a pair of long-legged quadruped animals in tow. "Here you go, Captain," the man said, holding out the leashes. "Thank you, Chin," Carda said, taking them as he squatted down to scratch both animals briefly behind the ears. "I don't believe you've met my pet Vornskers, Counselor. This one's named Drong. The somewhat more aloof one there is Storm. On Mirker, they use the Force to hunt their prey. Here, they're going to use it to find Mara, right?" The Vornskers made a strange sound, rather like a cackling purr. "Good," Carda said, straightening up again. "I believe we're ready now, Counselor. Shall we go?" Chapter 25. The alarms were still hooting in the distance as Han carefully leaned one eye around the corner. According to the floor plans R2 had pulled up, this should be the major outer defense monitor station in this sector of the garrison. There were likely to be guards, and those guards were likely to be alert. He was right on both counts. 5 meters away down the entry corridor, flanking a heavy blast door, stood a pair of stormtroopers. And they were alert enough to notice the skulking stranger looking at them and to snap their blaster rifles up into firing position. The smart thing to do, the thing any reasonably non-suicidal person would do, would be to duck back behind the corner before the shooting started. Instead, Han gripped the corner with his free hand, using the leverage to throw himself completely across the entry corridor. He made it to the other side, millimeters ahead of the tracking blaster bolts, flattening himself against the wall as the rapid fire blew out chunks of paneling metal behind him. They were still firing as Chewbacca leaned around the corner Han had just left and ended the discussion with two quick bowcaster shots. "Good job, Chewie," Han grunted, throwing a quick look behind him and then slipping back around the corner. The stormtroopers were out of the fight all right, leaving nothing in their way but a massive metal door, which, like the stormtroopers themselves, was no big deal, at least not for them. "Ready?" he asked, dropping into a half-crouch at one side of the door and raising his blaster. There would be another pair of guards inside. "Ready," Luke confirmed. There was the snap hiss of the kid's lightsaber, and the brilliant green blade whipped past Han's head to slice horizontally through the heavy metal of the blast door. Somewhere along the way, it caught the internal release mechanism. And as Luke finished the cut, the top part of the door shot up along its track into the ceiling. From the way the stormtroopers were facing the door, it was clear they'd heard the short fight outside. It was also clear that they hadn't expected anyone to be coming through this soon. Han shot one of them as he tried to bring his blaster rifle to bear. Luke lunged half over the bottom part of the door, lightsaber swinging, and took out the other. The group of Imperials manning their sensor consoles weren't expecting company either. They were fumbling for sidearms and scrambling for cover as Han and Chewbacca took them out. A dozen shots after that, the room had been reduced to a smoldering collection of junk. "That ought to do it," Han decided. "Better get lost before the reinforcements get here." But between the riot down at the main entrance and the wandering band of Minirshi, Imperial response time was down. The three intruders made it back along the corridor to the emergency stairway and three levels down to the pump room where they'd left the others. Two of the Nogri were standing silent guard just inside the door as Han keyed it open. "Any trouble?" Lando called from somewhere in the tangle of pipes that seemed to fill two-thirds of the room. "Not really," Han said, as Chewbacca closed and locked the door behind them. "Wouldn't want to try it again, though." Lando grunted. "I don't think you'll have to. They should be adequately convinced that there's a major aerial attack on the way." Let's hope so, Anne said, stepping around to where Lando was fiddling with an archaic-looking control board. R2 was plugged into a computer socket on the side of the board, while 3PO hovered off to the side like a nervous mother bird.
Vintage stuff, huh?
You've got that, Lando agreed. I think the Emperor must have just picked up the cloning complex and dropped it in here whole. R2 gibbered indignantly. Right, including the programming, Lando said dryly. I know a little about this stuff, Anne, but not enough to do any permanent damage. I think we're going to have to use the explosives. Fine with me, Anne said. He would have hated lugging them all the way across Wayland for nothing anyway. Where's Mara? Out there, Lando said, nodding toward another door half hidden by the pipes. In the main room. Let's check it out, Luke, Anne said. He didn't like the idea of Mara wandering around alone in this place. Chewie, stay here with Lando. See if there's anything worth blowing up. Crossing to the door, he keyed it open. Beyond was a wide circular walkway running around the inside of what seemed to be a huge natural cavern. Directly ahead, framed against a massive equipment column that extended downward from the ceiling through the center of the cavern, Mara was standing at the walkway's railing. "This the place?" he asked her, glancing around as he started toward her. About 20 other doors opened up onto the walkway at more or less regular intervals, and there were 4 retractable bridges extending out to a work platform encircling the central equipment column. Aside from a couple of their nobri skulking around doing guard duty, there was no one else in sight. But there were sounds. A muted hum of machinery and voices was coming from somewhere, punctuated by the faint clicks of relays and a strange rhythmic pulsing or whooshing sound, like the whole cavern was breathing.
It's the place, Mara confirmed, her voice sounding strange.
Maybe she thought it sounded like breathing, too.
Come and see.
Han threw a glance at Luke, and together they stepped to Mara's side and looked down over the railing. And it was, indeed, the place. The cavern was huge, extending downward at least 10 stories below their walkway. It was laid out like a sport arena, with each level being a kind of circular balcony running around the inside of the cavern. Each balcony was a little wider than the one above it, extending further into the center of the cavern, and making for a smaller hole around the big equipment column. There were pipes everywhere. Huge ones coming off the ducts of the central column. Smaller ones running around the edges of each of the balconies. And little ones feeding off them into the neatly arranged metal circles that filled the balconies and main floor. Thousands of little circles. Each one the top cover plate of a spare T cloning cylinder. Beside Han, Luke made a strange sound in the back of his throat. It's hard to believe, he said, sounding about halfway between awestruck and dumbfounded. Believe it, Han advised him grimly, pulling out his macro binoculars and focusing them on the main floor below. The ductwork blocked a lot of the view, but he could catch glimpses of men in med tech and guard uniforms scurrying around. They were on some of the balconies, too. They're stirred up like a rat's nest down there, he said. Stormtroopers on the main floor and everything. He threw a sideways look at Mara. Her expression was tight as she stared down at the cloning tanks, with a haunted look of someone gazing back into the past. Bring back memories? He asked.
Yes, she said mechanically.
She stood there a moment longer, then slowly straightened up.
But we can't allow it to stand.
Glad you agree, Anne said, studying her face. She looked and sounded okay now, but there was a lot of stuff going on under the surface. Hold it together, kid, he told her silently. Just a little longer, okay?
That column in the middle looks like our best shot. You know anything about it?
She looked across the cavern.
Not really, she hesitated. But there might be another way. The Emperor wasn't one for leaving things behind for other people to use, not if he could help it.
Hen threw a glance at Luke.
You mean this whole place might have a self-destruct?
It's possible, she said, that haunted look back in her eyes again.
If so, the control will be up in the throne room. I could go and take a look.
I don't know, Han said, looking down into the cloning cavern. It was an awfully big place for them to take on with a single sack of explosives. He'd give her that much. A destruct switch would simplify things a lot. But the idea of Mara and her memories up there in the Emperor's throne room didn't sound so good either.
Thanks, but I don't think any of us ought to go wandering around this place alone.
I'll go with her, Luke volunteered. She's right. It's worth checking out.
It'll be safe enough, Mara added. There's a service droid turbolift along the walkway that'll get us most of the way there. Most of the Imperial's attention should be focused on the riot at the entrance anyway.
Hen grimaced.
All right, get going, he growled. Don't forget to let us know before you pull the switch, okay?
We won't, Luke assured him with a tight grin. Come on, Mara. They headed down the walkway.
Where are they going? Lando asked from behind Han.
Emperor's throne room, Han said.
She thinks he might have put a self-destruct switch up there. You find anything?
R2's finally got a connection into the main computer, Lando told him. He's looking for schematics of that thing.
He gestured toward the central column.
We can't wait, Han decided, turning back as Chewbacca emerged from the pump room with their bag of explosives over one shoulder. Chewie, you and Lando take one of those bridges across and get busy.
Right, Lando said, taking a cautious look over the railing. What about you?
I'm going to go lock us in, Han told him,
pointing to the other doors opening out onto the walkway.
You, Nogri, come here.
The two Nogri who'd been standing guard moved silently to him as Lando and Chewbacca headed toward the nearest bridge.
Your command, Han Clan Solo, one of them asked.
You stay here, he told the nearest one. Watch for trouble.
You, he pointed to the other, help me seal off those doors. One good blaster shot into each control box ought to do it.
I'll go this way, you go the other.
He was about two-thirds of the way around his side of the walkway when he heard something over the eerie mechanical breathing sounds of the cavern below him. This book is continued on cassette number 12.